Hello, welcome to our program today. This is Deanna, and this is Spingola and Friends. It is Monday, August 11th, 2014. This weekly radio program is not sponsored by anyone, and therefore, it is for people who really can handle the truth. My website is spingola.com. There you will find information about my books, the Ruling Elite series. You will also find a timeline of book 2 and 3, which is a work in progress. I would love to have you also visit the website of a very dear person who has created and maintains spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. And all of the more recent audio files of my programs are at that site, and this would include the RBN files and the American Free Press files. During the program, we will take your questions and comments at 646-787-1915. We will also take questions and comments from the listeners via my email, which is comment@spingola.com, or from the chat room, spingola.chatango.com. My guest today is Stefan Verstappen, the author of The Art of Urban Survival and The 36 Strategies of Ancient China. His website is urbansurvivalstrategies.com. He is also the creator of a video documentary entitled Defense Against the Psychopath. Stefan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Deanna. Thanks for having me on.
I failed to ask you in the few minutes before the program how to pronounce your name. Did I do it correctly?
Yeah, you did it correctly. Yeah, that's fine.
Oh. Okay. Good. I'm glad. I hate to have my last name mangled, and some people do that.
I'm used to it, and it doesn't bother me at all. Call me anything, just call me.
Wonderful. I purchased your other book. You've had more than two books, but I did purchase the other book, The 36 Strategies of Ancient China, because it looked very fascinating, and so I did purchase that. It's available at Amazon, and I purchased it as a Kindle. I like Kindle books, and of course you provided me with a PDF file of your current book, and that the name of that book is, and we've already mentioned it, The Art of Urban Survival. And in your first chapter, and I think everyone is interested in psychopaths. They've either married one, dated one, they have one or two in their family, or one of them lives next door. We're all aware that there are psychopathic tendencies among our politicians and corporate leaders, but we just really are not sure. But in your key characteristics, you've defined some of the characteristics of psychopaths. And I thought it would be interesting to first go over those. And, of course, your film, your documentary, is very good. I watched that. So I recommend that people watch the documentary, and I do have it linked on my schedule page. But if we could just go over some of those characteristics.
Sure. So psychopaths are like us. They look like us. They sound like us. They reflect the general population in a similar way. So there are genius psychopaths and there are moron psychopaths. They also have the same, you know, variety of tastes and interests. And so you will have a genius psychopath that's into sadomasochism. And you might also have a idiot psychopath that's into leather or, you know. I mean, so they reflect kind of like the general population. But the key characteristic or the key difference between them and us is there's a certain part of the brain that does not function the way it does with what we would call normal or average people. And that is the frontal cortex, which apparently is the source or the seat for which conscience is processed. And we know this now because they were able to conduct experiments, certainly more recently, in which they took subjects and put them in a magnetic resonance imaging machine where they could see on a computer real-time imagery of what is actually going on in a person's brain, which is just remarkable, the science now, because, you know, 100 years ago, all we can do is guess what's going on in the brain. Actually, people in those days didn't even think that the brain controlled any of the functions that we now know it does. So they put people in the MRI, and what they did then was they flashed different types of images in front of them. And so some of the images would be very positive, such as, you know, children playing and laughing, or little kittens or puppy dogs and things like that. And then they would flash images that were unpleasant, such as scenes of violence and dead bodies and animal abuse. And they found that when a normal person observes these images, it shows that the frontal cortex of the brain becomes active when they're viewing these kind of positive images. It becomes active, and which shows that they're feeling something for these images. So if you see, you know, picture, you know, we all watch how many cute kitty cat YouTube videos, right, when we're a little bit depressed at the office. Well, let's watch one more kitty cat video, you know, because it lifts us up. We're you know, it entertains us, but it does more than entertain us. It stimulates that frontal cortex in our brain where our empathy and our conscience is processed. However, with the and then if you show them negative images, again, the frontal cortex is stimulated, but in a different way that shows that normal people have a revulsion to those types of images. You are reacting negatively to seeing images of death and violence. Now, with a psychopath, their frontal cortex doesn't react at all. It makes no difference to them whether they are looking at a picture of kittens playing with a ball of yarn, or whether they're looking at dead bodies lying in a burned out rubble. So what it shows is that their empathy does not exist. They have no empathy. They cannot connect on an emotional level with the rest of the world. Not only other human beings, but they have very little connection to the world of nature and animals and things like that. So the key characteristics of a psychopath is they don't care. Ultimately, they don't care. Now, from an early age, they've learned that they are different, and they know that other people care because they've observed it. You know, they'll be at school, and one of the kids will bring in some baby ducklings for show and tell, and all the kids are excited, and they'll gather around, and they're happy to see the baby ducklets. They don't care. You know, but they can observe the behavior of the rest of us, and they know that in order to fit in, they have to mimic that kind of behavior. So they have a whole lifetime of rehearsing, practicing, pretending to be human, and therefore they become really good at it. Actually, they're better at acting human than many of us are at being human, you know, because...
Wow, that's quite a statement.
Yeah,
that is very interesting. I've always wondered, are parents aware if they have a psychopathic child, or does it run in? Is it generational? Are psychopaths born? You mentioned the difference in the brain. Are they born that way, or do they evolve into a psychopath?
Yeah, that's a big question that there is no clear answer for. You know, we go back and forth between nature and nurture.
Mm-hmm.
Is everyone born with a clean slate and it's just, you know, abuse in the family or a toxic environment, maybe GMO foods or vaccines or
mm-hmm.
things like that, and that creates it, or are they born that way? There might even be a third alternative with it, which is called epigenetics. Have you... familiar with that term?
No, I'm not.
This is more recent evidence that seems to suggest that environmental conditions can trigger genetic changes, so that you might not necessarily have to be born with say the psychopath gene. There is no such thing. Well, yes, there is. Actually, they've discovered, they've isolated it, and they're calling it, and I hate the name that they're using to call it, but they're calling it the warrior gene. Now, personally, I follow the way of the warrior, so I'm really upset that they would call this the warrior
gene. Sure.
But that's what they're calling it. So, but it may be that instead of being born with the gene, something happens environmentally that now triggers the genes to alter themselves and become into the, you know, turn into the psychopath gene. So there is even that third possibility now. Where I stand between the two, I don't know. I'll be honest with you. I have seen children that were born that way. You know, they were like rotten kids. They were rotten babies. They were rotten when they were 1, 2, 3, and 4. And for the unfortunate parent that has one of those children, it's a lifetime of misery. Now, will they realize that their kid is a psychopath? I think some will, most probably won't, because first of all, you know, it's a subject that's not, you know, we don't talk about psychopaths around the water cooler, at least not yet, I guess. And it's not really, you know, that well known, so it'd be hard for a parent to, you know, diagnose their own child as being a psychopath. Those that may be a little bit smarter, have more, you know, maybe some exposure to, you know, modern psychology and things, they might be able to diagnose their child as being a psychopath. You know, for example, are you familiar with the Romanian orphans situation?
Wherein they had no real human touch. They were just left in cribs, didn't have any nurturing or anything like that, and it altered their characteristics. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's the one I mean.
You yes, know, okay.
You can no longer make human contact.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So it could be something like that. And if you have a child like that, oh, you know, what a nightmare, because there's no cure for it, except, wait a minute, let me run back on that. There is actually now different possibilities. There is a gentleman, oh boy, during the break I'll try and look up the name.
Well, we don't have breaks. Unless, on this program, we have no commercials, but if you need to have a break, just text me in the Skype window.
Okay. No, I can keep going. The name will come to me eventually. He was a neurologist, and he came out with a documentary. What was it called? It'll come to me. It's one of those things, you know.
Sure.
And he was instrumental in isolating the warrior gene. He was one of the neurophysicists or neurologists was researching psychopathy, and he helped to isolate the gene, and he also did some of the magnetic resonance imaging experiments. And what happened was, just for the hell of it, he decided to test himself for the psychopathy trait, and it turned out he was a carrier of the psychopath gene.
Oh.
Not only that, when they did the MRI test on him, it turned out he was a psychopath. He scored exactly like a psychopath. Now, he had to come to this conclusion, and he tried to figure out, he asked his family, he said, well, because he was married, he had kids, you know, successful career, you know, mainstream professor at a you know, Ivy League college, and so he asked his family, he says, well, you know, I just tested myself. It turns out I'm a psychopath. What do you think? And they all said, well, yeah, you know, you can't connect emotionally, Dad, you know. And but we don't care because we love you because you're such a great person.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, and then he apparently was loved and cared for by the community and his family and his friends. He could not make the emotional connections that we do on that type of level, but what he attributes the fact that he turned out to be, you know, a successful a professional with a loving family as opposed to a sadistic serial killer was he grew up in a wonderful family. He said that his family was the most loving, the most supportive, and he had the most marvelous childhood. And he attributes his parents and the wonderful environment that they created for him when he was a child and growing up and the support and the love they gave him for the fact that he grew up to be somebody that, okay, can't connect on an emotional level with a lot of things. He's not artistic. He cares less, couldn't care less about music or art or things like that. But he still, you know, cares about his family, and the family cares about him, and he's a success in society. So is there a cure for it? I think if it's caught early enough, you know, if that child is born, you know, maybe with the psychopath gene, just like this doctor was, but the family environment was so, you know, rewarding and friendly and positive that they can still grow up to be, you know, fairly normal human beings.
Okay, what are some of the essential or the basic characteristics of a psychopath that we would expect to see? Now, I know psychopaths, from what I've read, are usually compulsive liars.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's funny with them, too, because their lying is, they have a little smirk, what they call the cheater's smirk, because they have to smirk because they enjoy the fact that they are conning you. One of the few things that seems to really resonate in the emotional life of a psychopath is when they cause you misery and suffering. It's really weird, but that's what they enjoy. They enjoy to fool you. So they will lie even when the truth would serve them better, because lying means they're conning you, and that's what they enjoy doing. So, you know, simply telling the truth that would get them out of trouble, that would be fine. But even still, they still want to lie to you because, you know, they have a little smirk. Oh, you got suckered. I conned you again, you fool. And lying is part of their existence, and they become very good at it. You know, they study it, and they're convincing liars. Now, what kind of career could you have in this world that will pay you a lot of money? You don't have to actually work, and all you need to do is lie your ass off 24/7.
Politicians fit into that group, I think.
Yeah. Good.
Yes. Well, now, if I had a child that lied all the time, even when they've, you know, had their hand in the cookie jar, and they say, oh, I wasn't in the cookie jar, and there's, you know, cookie crumbs all over their lap and their face, and yet they say, no, I didn't do that. And even when they're caught, people lie. Psychopaths lie, correct?
Yeah, and it's actually an effective strategy, because even when caught red-handed, you know, they continue to lie. And so those of us that have any kind of a conscience would think to ourselves, good God, you've got blood all over your hands. There's a dead hooker in your bedroom. You know, the knife is still in your back pocket. How can you possibly deny this? And yet they still do. And we would think, well, maybe, how could, you know, maybe they're telling the truth, because how could you possibly lie even when you're caught red-handed? Because I couldn't possibly, you know, come up with a story like that. I would feel too much shame and embarrassment. I would say, you caught me. So because we can't imagine ourselves lying under a situation like that, the fact that they lie again makes us, you know, gives us a moment of doubt, you know. So
And that is how they get away with it.
That's how they get away with it. You know, I have a clip of Clinton. Of course, there's no audio in it, but the clip, anybody that knows the history, is where he's looking his eyes into the camera, and he's saying, I did not have sex with that woman. You know, like,
right.
So knowing all the while, not only did he have sex with her, he had sex with half of Arkansas, for crying out loud. You know,
right.
Sex with the other
right.
half. So what a bald-faced liar. Oh,
and he lied under oath.
Under oath doesn't matter. Oath.
Yeah.
You know, oath matters to somebody like us, where we take pride in. It,
that's right. I keep forgetting. You know, lying under oath is not a big deal.
Means nothing to them. You know, they'll swear on the Bible, whatever it takes. You know,
sure.
Swear to Satan, whoever happens to be the deity of the day. They don't care.
Or they would lie in court if they were caught. You know, if they were being tried for murder or some other crime, they would lie in court and not feel any guilt or anything about it. Correct.
Right, and they wouldn't show very much that they're lying either. That, like, if I lie, you know, first of all, for me personally, I have like a tendency to feel guilty about things. So if somebody came up to me and said, "Did you steal $20?" I would start to look guilty almost immediately because I would go, "What $20? Where?" You know.
Yeah. Right.
No, I wasn't there. I don't know. So I would start to get flustered. I mean, I couldn't actually, you know, get away with lies. I'm a very bad liar that way. But so I would expect other people to be bad at lying too. And that is the mistake we make. We think, well, you know, they couldn't possibly lie on those circumstances. I mean, there he is in front of 300 million Americans talking to the world under oath with 20 cameras on him. How could he lie and still look so cool and calm? You know?
Right.
But with no emotion, with no empathy, means nothing to them. They lie like they breathe. It's nothing. It's an everyday thing. And so we think that they're telling the truth because we don't see them sweating, but they don't sweat.
Mm. And so if you have a compulsive liar in your family, you're apt to, well, believe them because if you're not a psychopath, then since they're so convincing, it would be easy to convince other family members that what you're saying is absolutely true. Also, they have a tendency to be able to pass a lie detector test, correct?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I'm against lie detector tests being used in the court of law because they are so fallible.
Sure.
And not only are they fallible, they will tend to indict innocent people and tend to free guilty people.
All right. Like you, you would probably fail because you feel guilty, as you just mentioned, that you would get flustered. I know I would get flustered because I would think they're going to think I'm lying about something and then my heart would go up. And
exactly. Like mm-hmm. you're concerned about coming across as being truthful.
Absolutely.
So, you know, if they strapped you to a chair, Deanna, you know. And they
right. That puts you in a vulnerable situation to begin
put
with.
Put you in a vulnerable, and then you have all these, you know, authority figures around you, the detective, the lie detective administrator or whatever.
Sure.
They say, Deanna, in 1989, were you at this and this location, and did you do, you know, I mean,
sure.
Just being accused like that, now you're going to start getting nervous anyways. So
of course.
The only thing a lie detector does is register physiological reactions in a human being, and it registers basically four. Galvanic skin response, or GSR, which is the amount of conductivity in your skin, and it's really a simple, stupid kind of a test. What it is if you get nervous, then you tend to sweat. When you sweat, your skin becomes more conductive, and so this tool measures how conductive the electricity is in your skin. But it all depends on you sweating, you know, or otherwise.
Sure.
If you don't sweat when you lie, or maybe the room is hot and you do sweat, you know, maybe wore a warm jacket to it, it's going to, and you start sweating, then it's going to indicate that you're lying, even though you're not.
Uh-huh.
The other thing is heart rate. The idea is that when you're nervous, your heart rate goes up. So, yeah, the theory is that if you're lying, you'll be nervous, therefore your heart rate will increase. But lie detector doesn't work on a psychopath because they're not nervous. So their heart rate is going to remain the same. The other one is blood pressure and respiration. And again, it all depends on you getting nervous about lying. But if you're not nervous about lying, then you won't get those results. So psychopaths will pass a lie detector test. It's nothing for them. Whereas, you know, you and I, just by being questioned, and they, you know, in all fairness, lie detector experts understand this, and they try to account for the false positives of a nervous interviewee, you know, but it's more art than science, you know.
Sure. Now, you mentioned that psychopaths don't always turn out to be serial killers, but there probably are some serial killers who were or are, in fact, psychopaths. Correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's a safe bet that if you're a serial killer, you are a psychopath. I mean, how can you kill people one after another after another? I mean,
okay.
You know, I differentiate that in the book because, Defense Against a Psychopath is the first part of the book because I want people to understand that the dangers that you face in society come from two sources. Yes, crime and psychopaths. And the two may or may not be the same. So what I differentiate is that there you might be a killer and not be a psychopath. For example, if you had a lot to drink and then you come home and you find your wife in bed with another man and you get all angry and you pick up the shotgun out of the closet and you shoot the other guy, that doesn't mean necessarily that you're a psychopath. Those are crimes of passion, you know. They occur under the heat of the moment. It's not premeditated. And in that kind of situation, the person is not a psychopath. However, the type of person that can methodically plot and plan and carry out a murder is definitely a psychopath.
Okay. All righty. Now, I have known psychopathic people.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure every one of your listeners has met one or two in their lifetime.
Sure.
Yeah.
Now, your book tells us how we can protect ourselves against such people. And I note that one of the things that they do, just right away, that they try to impress their target victim. They try to impress them. They ride in on a white horse, and they're willing to just do anything for you, to help you, to save you from whatever, when in fact you are their target. Is that correct? Is my assumption correct?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Deanna. That's part of the modus operandi. And in the book and in the video, you know, what I try to do is, first of all, educate people about what they are. You've got to realize that these are what you're dealing with. A lot of people know they have met and encountered and probably suffered at the hands of psychopaths, but they never quite knew what they were dealing with. There's all kinds of ways to justify these people's behaviors that we use that, you know, we say, oh, well, they came from an abusive background, or they had a substance abuse problem, or they were always poor, or nobody loved them enough, or we've made excuses for these people our entire lives and kept getting screwed over in return, you know. And
isn't that part of what they try to do is create, poor me, I'm a victim, my brother used to beat me up, or I came from a poor family, and I was deprived, I didn't have, you know, there wasn't any enough clothes or enough money or enough food. Don't they try to build themselves into a victim?
Well, that's one of the strategies that they will use. Some psychopaths use that strategy primarily. It's called the victim strategy. And it's more often used by female psychopaths to rope in the males, you know, because they have, kind of a white knight syndrome. I mean, good guys do. There's a bunch of jerks out there, too. They're empty, hollow people, not necessarily psychopaths, but just empty, lonely people. You know, that's the nature of humanity. You're going to have those kind of people in society. But, you know, any honest, decent, healthy young man wants to, you know, wants to help society, wants to protect females, wants to be a source of good and strength and you know, that people can rally around him and he'll protect them, things like that. That's, you know, it's what I call the warrior ethos.
Mm-hmm.
And in the old traditional sense of the word.
Right.
And so they are the biggest victims for the type of woman that becomes a victim, you know. Because they'll come on, you know, I just need somebody to save me. You know, this is one of my favorites. My last boyfriend, husband, was very abusive towards me, and he beat me. Oh, I mean, you know, 9 out of 10 guys are automatically get suckered into with that story. I've been suckered that way many times. Oh, you know, my past husband was so abusive, my past boyfriend, he beat me, and I'm going, well, you know, I'll treat you like royalty, and you know.
Now, do psychopaths ever marry each other?
Yes, they do. They often will find a pair bonding, and then there's been several famous cases throughout history of husband-wife serial killer bondings. You know, there was the case...
Like Bonnie and Clyde kind of thing?
Yeah, Bonnie and Clyde would be one. There was the case there in England. I forget their name, but more famously here in Canada, we had Paul Bernardo and Carla Holmoka, which were a pair of psychopaths that raped, murdered, tortured, I think, 4 teenage girls. They even murdered the psychopath wife's younger sister, you know.
Yikes.
Oh, it was horrible. And he went to jail. She's living a comfortable life in the Bahamas now.
Wow. So yeah. I guess she fared better than he did.
Well, because she played the victim card at the end, and she got out because, you know, her defense was, oh, I was an abused wife, and he was already a famous serial rapist here in Toronto. He was called the Scarborough Rapist, and this went for years. You know, people were saying, oh, be careful about the Scarborough Rapist. You know, he haunts bus stops. He'll take women out and drag them into the bushes, and became more and more violent. He beat the living crap out of these women, you know, and then the dead bodies started showing up, and finally they get caught, and she pleads, you know, look at me, I was beaten, he abused me, and so she got off, more or less. She had to serve, like, I think 10 years, but, you know, the usual half off with good behavior and all that, and so 5 years later, she's in the Bahamas. She comes from a wealthy family. I mean, I wish I could go to the Bahamas after murdering young children and so on. I mean, I wish I could go to the Bahamas anyways, you know.
Sure. Sure.
So she got away with it. Only what happened was, and, you know, I can't believe this happened in our judicial system, but she had told her lawyer, there are some videotapes hidden in the ceiling panel in the bathroom in our house. Please take those tapes and hide them. And she did. And after the trial and after everything came out, those videotapes were finally released to the police. And in those videotapes, it showed that Carla Holmoka was a willing participant in all the torture and the abuse and the rape of these girls.
Wow. But, so maybe that's why she went to the Bahamas to escape extradition or something?
No, because it's you know, double jeopardy. You can't.
All right, yes.
She already got off. She already got convicted of, you know, involuntary
manslaughter,
whatever the hell it was, and she got off. So there again, the victim strategy. My God, and it turned out she was, like, you know, a prime participant if you read the transcripts of these tapes.
Wow.
You know, you have nightmares. You won't sleep for weeks what these people are capable of, you know. What's even scarier, so they were both psychopaths, and they had this sort of kind of bonding, and we've seen that there's several cases like that all throughout the world of male-female psychopaths. My guess would be the Clintons are one of those bondings, because certainly he's such a compulsive liar. I mean, you can't possibly be that good at lying and not be a psychopath, you know.
Right.
And then her, I don't know, she's like the Wicked Witch of the West or something like that.
Sure.
And... you know, for them, it's utilitarian, right?
Sure.
It's not about, you know, love or anything like that. They're not capable of love, but they're useful to each other. So with Paul and Carla, she was useful because that's how they would pick up these girls. It would be her in the car. So when a girl is called over to the car and it's a woman, they're more trusting,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that was the same what happened with that serial killer couple there in England. It'll come back to me. They had like 7 kids, and those poor children grew up in that kind of family where both mother and father took turns sexually abusing them. But again, the wife was used to pick up the young girls, because if it was a guy in the car, well, you know, every woman's going to be a little bit hesitant going up to a stranger in a car, right?
Sure.
But when it's another woman, oh, miss, little girl, can you help me? You know, they're trusting. And
right.
Psychopaths are equally distributed among men and women. We tend to focus on the men because they tend to be more bloody, you know, with the serial killing and all that kind of stuff. And so they get more of the attention. But The female version is just as evil, just as dangerous.
Wow.
Yeah.
So just regular compulsive lying. Do psychopaths kind of progress towards other things, like they might grow up lying to their parents? And honest to Pete, I think that even though I don't lie, I think that we think that we can tell when other people are lying, but I guess I must admit I can't tell.
No, we can't. And it's a mistake to think that you can, because you will allow yourself to be conned. First of all, the difference between psychopaths and the rest of us is that we all lie. You know, I tell lies, you tell lies. You know, usually we try to keep them harmless lies, like, I tried to call you last night, you weren't home, where were you? I seen the call display, I wasn't in the mood to talk to you. No, we don't say, we're going to say, oh, geez, you know, I was at the store, right?
Yeah. Well, okay, here's when I lie, is that if someone calls that is a salesperson and they ask for my husband, I always say he's not available. I don't say he's not home. I just say he's not available. And that's probably the biggest lie that I tell.
No, that's actually a very good defense strategy. You never tell anybody, a stranger that calls you, that you're ever alone.
Right? Oh.
And that's something I teach the kids. I have another set of books out called The Little Warriors. And what I've done in those two books, one for teachers to teach the program, teachers and parents to, you know, this is how you, you know, play the games with the kids, this is how you teach them. And then there's like a color book for the kids. And it's meant for a very young age, you know, 6 to 9 years of age. And one of the lessons that I teach the kids in the book, and we go through it in a role-playing exercise, you know, put the phone to your thumb and finger to your head, you know, like a phone. And I would pretend to be calling, is your mom and dad home? And they would go, no. And I go, oh, what's wrong with that? What do you
right.
mean with that? Well, you don't want anybody to know that they're not home. So if they ask for your parents, what you always say is, they can't come to the phone right now.
Ah.
Right? So you don't, because you never know. That's how, it's a classic strategy for burglars to call up and say, hey, anybody home? You know?
Sure.
And then if there's a kid that answers the phone, no, mom and dad are at work until 5. I'm home. I'm a latchkey kid.
Yeah, that would not be good.
That would not be good. So now the burglar knows he's got 2 hours to come in there, slap the kid around, and rob the house blind. You know.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's a natural. It's a good strategy, Deanna. Do not feel guilty about that little lie. You know.
Yeah.
So we all tell lies. It doesn't make us psychopaths. What the difference is completely. In essence, you know, psychopaths lie because it is their nature to lie. That's what they enjoy doing. They lie because they enjoy the feeling of conning you, because you're an idiot for believing them.
Okay.
And therefore, they feel superior to them, because psychopaths are also major egomaniacs. The world revolves around them. The sun shines out their navel. I mean, and they expect the entire world to do this. They want you to be dependent on them and to admire them and to rely on them. And because you're nothing compared to the supreme wonderfulness of them. So lying is part of their ego trip. And when I lie, when you lie, I'm not thinking, oh, geez, I just fooled my friend by lying to him when I was at the store. No, I feel bad that I had to lie, because I don't really want to tell him the truth, that I was busy with something else. I didn't really want to talk to him right then. And
sure.
I'll get back later. But I had to lie, because it's easier just to say I was at the store rather than to explain my whole emotional turmoil at the time when you called, you know.
Sure. Well, you don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. It's like the wife that says, do I look fat in this dress?
Absolutely.
What husband is going to say, yeah, you really look fat. Why don't you put something else on? That would not be a good thing.
No. I will always say something positive, even if I personally think the opposite, you know.
Sure.
I want to be positive. What's the point dragging somebody down, you know, for the truth? No. That case, a little bit of lie. Whatever, you know, a little bit of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Sure. Now, we mentioned that they like to play the victim card, and they like to play the victim card even when it doesn't really seem necessary. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's part of the modus operandi. You know, they have lots of different ways. But like I said, in the book, first of all, you know, people have to become aware that this is what you're dealing with, and this is why nothing you've ever tried with these people have ever met with any kind of success. These people never change. They never, you know, you can never, you know, lead them the way to God or teach them about love or find the inner goodness in them or get them to truly regret their past ways. None of that ever works with them, you know. So once you realize that, you save yourself a whole lot of bother. You know, just it's incurable. And so don't try anymore. Don't waste any more of your time and your energy and your love and your caring on these people. You can't do it because it does nothing.
That's amazing, because we all have consciousness, or we all feel. We have empathy, sympathy. You mentioned seeing dead animals or dead people, and when those commercials on TV come on about the abandoned dogs and cats, and I mean, I cannot look at the. I have to leave the room. I feel so awful. I just cannot bear to think that people would mistreat animals or mistreat other human beings. It just, I can't believe that people would do this. And so, but they do. I mean, people do mistreat animals and mistreat other people. And you'd think, well, maybe if they had some sort of a, I don't know, a change of heart, maybe if they learned about goodness and love and charity and all that stuff, that maybe they would come around. But you're saying no. Once a psychopath, typically always a psychopath.
Yeah, there's been no evidence whatsoever that they would ever change. And first of all, to change, you would want to change.
Ah.
You know, any sort of self-help or psychological counseling is dependent on the person themselves doing the work because they want to change. So, you know, an addict that enrolls in rehab has to do the work of rehab. He gets guidance and counseling, but the work is done by the addict because the addict wants to kick the habit.
Mm.
A psychopath thinks they're a perfect being. Why would they change? There's nothing wrong with them. If you people are all stupid enough to care about animals and each other and worry about good and bad, then that's your problem. They, however, are perfect human beings. And so there is never an incentive for these people to change themselves. So who's going to change them? You know, you can't force them. You know, it's like, if I can make an analogy, it's like somebody who is born blind. And now we want to explain to them the color red. And we can't understand why they don't get what the color red is, because we've explained it to them so well, so many times. But they're blind. They can't see the color red. And, you know, and if you've never seen that color, you can't understand or know what that color is, no matter how many people describe it to you. And so it's the same thing with the psychopaths. They're born with an emotional blindness. There's a disability there, in a sense. And so you can explain from now to, you know, the cows come home about empathy and caring and love and sharing and kindness. And it means nothing to them. They cannot comprehend it. It's impossible for them to comprehend it. So it's tragic for them. They are, you know, human beings, and they are half alive their entire lives. You know, they're almost, you know, they're the undead. You know, the vampire analogy is no doubt based on psychopaths. They are vampires. They live in darkness. They suck on the life of other people. And although they can be very powerful, you know, they might have a lot of power and know how to manipulate people and use their, you know, their psychic or their evil stare to, you know, terrify their victims. The fact is, though, that they do live in darkness, you know, and that's a half life, you know. We that do feel, that get joy from nature and beauty and music and things like that, we are alive. They are half dead. So it's tragic for them. However, we can't save them, and any interaction you have with them is going to be to your detriment. So, you know, what's the alternative then? The alternative is simply to have nothing to do with them, because you can't help them, and they will only suck more life from you. So do you just want to give away your time and energy for nothing? Life's too short, you know. Mm-hmm. Life's too short. So I feel bad for them. You know, I have some, you know, on an objective level, I have sympathy. When you get to know them up front and personal, you wish they would just all drop dead, because they're just the most miserable, horrible creatures in the world. They're just, you know, the evil that they spread and the destruction that they cause. I mean, these people really, most of them should be at the end of a gallows. So now, I feel sorry for them. But to be honest with you, if it is genetic and they're born that way, then I want to give them at least that, you know.
True. I was just thinking about this movie. It's kind of one of my favorite movies, Sleeping with the Enemy.
Uh-huh.
Was that husband a psychopath? Are you familiar with the movie? It was...
Julia Roberts, was it?
Yes.
Yeah, and was it... who was it? Rick Sarandon or something like that, I guess?
Someone like that, yeah.
Yeah, boy, that movie goes back a while for me. I don't remember it too well, but yeah, that would be, you know, it's the classic psychopathic stalker too. For example, later on in the book, The Art of Urban Survival, there is a chapter on stalkers.
Oh, yes. I've had people talking about stalking. That, yes, let's talk about that too. But in the marital, in marriages, does a psychopath just take over and control the wife? It's been my experience too. Well,
yeah.
Not my personal experience, but to see a psychopathic person, and I've seen this in a woman, who literally did not allow her husband or children to have a lot of outside influences. In other words, this woman literally isolated her family.
Yeah, it's a classic strategy, and it's a predatory strategy. For example, when you look at you know, nature videos, you know, lions hunting in the savannah, look at the strategy that the lions use. They see a pack of wildebeests, so now they circle around the wildebeests, right? And there's a big pack of them. They're 50, maybe 100. And the lions are circling around, and what they're looking for is the weakest one, and that's often the infant. And that is also, you know, as an aside, why there is so much child abuse in our society. Children are the primary victims of psychopaths. I can't speak out enough against the abuse of children. That's why I wrote the books, The Little Warriors, because I wanted to give parents and teachers and children some tools to defend themselves against predators. Because nobody's giving them any tools, and they are the primary target. And the reason they're the primary target is because they're the most vulnerable. Psychopaths are cowards. They won't pick on me. I'm 6'2". I'm 220 pounds. I've been studying martial arts for 40 years. Psychopaths give me a wide berth. They see me coming 20 feet away and they cross the street. I swear to God, but when I'm not around, you know, my 98-pound wife, suddenly they're coming out at the woodwork to her, you know, because they're cowards and they target children. So what the predators will do, just like the lions, they'll search for the weakest link. So people with empathy and especially people that are really empathic, they are weak towards the psychopaths, and the psychopaths will target the best of us. That's the other thing that's really, you know, ironic, that they go after those of us that have the most caring. We care the most, and they see that as a weakness, and therefore they target us. So like the lions, they look for the weakest wildebeest. So they find one that's sick or weak or injured, or one of the infants. Now, once they've targeted that wildebeest, what they do is try to separate that animal from the rest of the herd so that the herd cannot come to the rescue of the targeted victim. And they'll do that by, you know, charging the rest of the herd, chasing them off, but one other lion will come in and try and cut the target away from the herd. And so in a personal relationship, psychopaths, once they've latched onto their victim, and usually, you know, if it's in the family, it's the nicest kid in the family. If it's in a relationship, it's the most caring husband or the most caring woman. Then once they've got them, they will cut them away from their herd because they don't want the herd to come and support them. So they will isolate their victim by causing discord between the victim and their family and friends. You know, they'll find a way to always screw it up. They'll ruin the family Thanksgiving dinner. They'll, you know, manipulate the victim into saying, well, your family doesn't care about you, and they treat you badly, and you should have nothing else to do with them anymore because blah, 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 blah. So what happens is victims are now isolated, so they can never go to a support group of other people and say, geez, you know, my husband, my wife, he does this, he does that, she does this. You know, am I going insane? Should I keep putting up with it? Well, they don't have the option of getting the advice and support, the moral support that you need to battle these people. You know, you need people on your side to say, no, you're right. That's wrong what he or she is doing. You've got to put an end to it. And if you can't put an end to it, you've got to leave that abusive relationship. That's what psychopaths fear, that you're going to go to your family and they'll say, well, leave that son of a gun, you know, or that son of a bitch.
Sure. So, but if they do become isolated, do they then buy into what the psychopath is trying to tell them? Do they start believing that they are less of a person, or that their family members are really terrible, and that the target shouldn't have anything to do with the family?
Yeah, absolutely. It's again part of their strategy. You see, they have a modus operandi where when they first enter your life, they are the most wonderful person you've ever met, you know? And that's, again, like politicians, when they start out on the campaign trail, they go and visit hospitals, and then they're hugging, you know, legless veterans.
Oh, right, and kissing babies, yes.
And kissing babies, oh, my God, they just love humanity. They love everybody, and they promise, they're going to help, they care, they promise, oh, you know, I'm going to do something for you. I'm going to make some real change. We're going to make it better, oh, you know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then they get elected, and what happens? You know, try knocking on the door as a constituency and bringing a complaint to them saying, you know, listen, I voted for you. Can you have 5 minutes of your time? Yeah, right. You know, you'll be out in the back handcuffed and beaten in faster than you can blink, you know.
Sure.
So that's the way they do it in a relationship, too. You know, she's the most wonderful woman. She cares about children. He's wonderful. He's a good provider. Bah, bah, bah. Then, now you're married. And then slowly but surely, the manipulation starts. Well, the manipulation comes in at the very beginning. It's all manipulation with them, right? They do what's called a cold reading, which is like what a phony psychic a fortune teller will do, you know, and it's just reading a person's body language, starting out with vague terms and narrowing it, right? And I can do it too. You know, you can do it. If you were taught the techniques, it's not rocket science. You know, you take a person, you look at them, you start asking questions, you look at how they, you know, react and what their answers are. So you find somebody that, okay, she's, you know, 30 pounds overweight, so of course she's going to be conscious about her looks, you know, and so now you see that that's her weakness. So now you're going to have to tell her, wow, you know, you look fine. No, 40 pounds overweight, 60 pounds, 100 pounds. I like fat girls, you know. Fat girls are jolly, and we know that fat girls are the most wonderful girls. And, you know, so you start to manipulate them. Their weakness is their self-appearance, so you manipulate them that way. Or if their weakness is you know, maybe they have abuse, separation anxiety issues because their father left when they were six, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How many times don't we know a woman that's looking for a daddy image in a husband, right?
Mm-hmm. So, do they also go after people who are unhappily married? Are they the type of people who like to break up marriages?
Well, sure, because that's the double bonus for them. Not only do you get to screw over one person's life, you get to screw over two people's lives. You know?
Oh, so it's kind of a double whammy. Okay.
It's a double whammy. I get to screw you over and your husband or your spouse or whoever it is. You know, I get to destroy them. And if you have children, well, I get to destroy their lives because now they are no longer part of a loving, functioning family, right?
Right.
So, yeah, it's like bonus points on the pinball machine for these guys.
Wow. Okay, so they isolate their victim, and then ultimately they isolate them just as the lions do with the wildebeest.
Exactly. And then comes the kill.
Oh, okay.
Excuse me. And I don't mean that necessarily in
literally.
The serial killer. Yeah, then comes the kill. Because the serial, look at Ted Bundy, exact same strategy. He came off as the victim. Remember, he went around with his arm in a cast.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He drove a little Volkswagen Beetle. And he was charming and good-looking, and he would go up to college girls, and he'd say, oh, you know, I'm trying to get this baby carriage in the back of my vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got a broken arm. So he's the victim. He's the charmer. He's worried about children. He's got a baby carriage, and can you help me get this into my car? And the minute the woman's back is turned, he slugs him over the back of the head with a wrench and pops him in the car and spends the next 5 days torturing her to death, you know? That is the strategy. It works with serial killers. It works on a personal relationship where they come in charming, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Then once they've manipulated you, got you to feel that you're not good enough or there's flaws or you couldn't live without them, and after all, your family has now abandoned you and your friends no longer talk to you because he's isolated you, now there's only that psychopath left in your life. Now the mask starts to drop off even more, and they become dictators. They become tyrants in your life. They will tell you when to eat, when to sleep, what to think, where to go, what to do, how to dress, because the ultimate goal of psychopaths everywhere is total and complete domination over other people. So with Ted Bundy, he comes in as a victim, as a charming victim, as a caring white knight victim. Then he gets you, then he beats you up, then he ties you up, and now he comes to the part that he enjoys, which is the total domination by torturing and murdering you. Same thing with a politician, comes into the race, kissing babies, hugging vets, loving everybody, promise, promise, promise. Now he's in power. Now he's writing executive orders every other day, bypassing Congress, bypassing the Constitution, in clear violation of everything the United States was founded on.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because now he's in power.
Right.
Now comes the tyranny. Now comes the dictatorship.
Wow.
So did you know, any of these politicians, you know, start the campaign trail by saying, listen, when I get in power, I'm going to sign 37 different executive orders that are going to extinguish all of your human rights. So vote for me. You know,
of course. That's not, we're not going to vote for somebody like that. Of course not. And of course, we're not going to marry somebody like that if they come in and demonstrate exactly what they are upon the first meeting. Of course not. Yes, that makes sense.
So it makes sense. You know, everybody can understand this. So long as you get, once you understand what they are and how they operate, they're pretty predictable. They always do the same thing, and the end result is always more money and power for them. That's all it is, everything they do, every lie they tell, every little scheme that they try to hatch. The ultimate goal of that is more power and money for them.
Right. And they never show any remorse.
Mm-mm. Yeah, they have regrets. You know, I wish I could have killed 60 people instead of 40. I wish I could have destroyed 14 nations instead of 12. I wish I could have, you know, caused some more death and destruction. They have actually those regrets.
Right. But in a personal, on a personal level, they don't care who they hurt. They don't care if they hurt children.
No, they prefer children. There's something about children and psychopaths. That's why, again, you know, my little warrior book, because, you know, knowing how dangerous psychopaths are, you know, and how difficult it is for us as an adult to confront them and survive an encounter with them, imagine how impossible it is for a child to survive an encounter with a psychopath. And when a psychopath targets a child, guaranteed, there are no adults around, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to have a 6 or 8-year-old kid facing a scheming, devious, intelligent, manipulative psychopath. You know, what's the kid's chance? No chance whatsoever. So the psychopath from the very beginning has total dominance and control. Bingo.
Right.
They like. That's why they target children. They're cowards. Psychopaths are cowards. A lot of people, they say they don't have fear, and therefore they tend to, you know, engage in sort of like fear sports. They tend to be, you know, adrenaline junkies. And I'm not too sure how I stand on that, because I found most of them to be quite cowardly. And certainly with interpersonal dealing with other humans, they tend to be cowards. And so they prefer the children. And there's also one other element to this, which borders on sort of the supernatural, but there is something about the innocence of children that make psychopaths salivate. They enjoy destroying innocence. I don't know why. I don't know why that gets them off, but it does. The evidence is there. The proof is there. They enjoy to destroy that innocence. That's why they like to sexually abuse young children. You know, it's not about sex, and it's not, you know, like a schoolmaster that you know, diddles the Cub Scouts at
sure.
At Cub Scout. It's not because he's sexually attracted to young boys. I think this is a big myth that the pedophiles have sort of brought out there. Oh, I'm just attracted to little boys, or I'm a homosexual, that's why I like boys. I don't think it has anything to do with being homosexual, and I don't think it has anything to do with sexual attraction. I think it has everything to do with the enjoyment of destroying innocence and the act of being perversive. They like that stuff, and who knows why, but that's what it is. That's what they do.
Now, in a family situation, they don't always take advantage physically, but they could also take advantage mentally, and just to control a person's life, a child's life, like I don't know who they can play with, or where they can go, or what they can do.
Yeah, there's different types of psychopaths. There's one kind of division that we call somatic and cerebral. And the cerebral tend to be the intellectual types, and the somatic tend to be the, you know, the bodybuilder type. So, you know, when you see Slick Willie and he's, you know, he's got the Armani suit and he's got the gold chains and he's got the capped teeth and the poofed hair and the bouffant and the fake tan and, you know,
mm-hmm.
good, he's got, you know, it's all about him. He's like a, you know, pathological narcissist, which is still a psychopath.
Right.
For them, then the physical takes precedence over the mental. They want to be, you know, show how strong they are, and then they want to have really wild sex and really kinky sex, and they need it 8 times a day because they'll go crazy unless they have it 8 times a day every day and that type of thing. So they're more likely to engage in a physical abuse. However, the other type, which is the cerebral type, they tend not to be so oriented in the physicality. They are more oriented up in their heads. So these are the guys and girls that think they're so smart. They know better than everybody. And you can hear them. They're always talking about, oh, so-and-so is so stupid, and they're so stupid, and they're so stupid, and, oh, they bought that car, and it's such in bad taste, and her dress looks just awful. And it's like,
so they never say anything good about anyone.
Oh, almost never. You know, and it's a form of mental abuse. And if you have somebody like that in your family, let's say it's your mother or somebody, then, you know, your school grades are never good enough, and you're never good enough for the family, and you never look good enough, you weren't smart enough, and you didn't behave well enough. And they might not sexually abuse you or beat you, but the endless demeaning comments and beating you down, robbing you of your self-esteem, robbing you of your confidence, and so that you're, you know, and I've met the victims of these people, and they're just as horrible as if they were sexually, or they're just as damaged as if they were sexually abused. I mean, you are, you know, beaten down with no confidence, no self-esteem, you know, by these people that rob you of your human dignity. And that's just, to me, just as horrible as the physical violence. And
right. For
the victim, just as destructive, too. So, yeah, you can have both types.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so how do we protect ourselves? You've indicated that you've written books for children so that they can learn how to protect themselves. But what about adults? How can we protect ourselves against psychopaths? Now, I have met some. One of them, he wanted to date me, but he was just kind of, my gut said, this guy is something wrong with this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dating somebody else at the time.
Only one other person?
Well, I don't know.
One
that there may have been quite a few others.
Oh, I'm sure.
But I never really actually went out with him. But he, I think he saw me as a victim initially. I was recently divorced, and I was doing quite well in my profession. Drove a nice car, and I think he saw me as well. Within a month, he asked me if I wanted to invest some money in his project. And I thought, not likely, buddy, because I just had this feeling that this guy was nothing but a a fraud.
Yeah.
And I soon, you know, got rid of him. And it was interesting that I went out to dinner with his girlfriend after I discovered that he did have a girlfriend. It was very interesting that during the dinner, I mean, it was just a couple of gals going out just enjoying dinner. He called her at least three times just to let her know that he loved her. And I'm thinking, no, he's checking up on her to see if she's still his target, because he thought Deanna's probably educating her about psychopaths or something. But I thought that was so weird that he would call her three times just during dinner. Is that weird?
No, not at all. Not at all. You know, they play a lot of people. They have a lot of people on the line usually. You know, and you know. So to protect yourself, how do you protect yourself? Well, what you did was the right thing. First of all, what you need to do, or what your listeners and all of us in society need to understand, is that these people are out there. That, you know, Robert Hare, who is a fellow Canadian here.
Oh, right. Yes, I've read his stuff.
Yeah, you know, Suits and Snakes was his latest book. And, you know, he's often... they're trying to determine what percentage of the population would be psychopathic. And traditionally, the statistics said about, you know, 3% around there. I think Robert Hare has kind of raised his theory on that to, you know, 5% of the population. And personally, I think about, yeah, 5%, maybe even as high as 10% of the population, you know, might be a psychopath. So you need to understand that these people are out there, and you have to understand that there is no good that ever comes from them. Nothing good ever comes from them. Because we are, you know, we have been raised on a type of morality, you know, because it's a, you know, Christian kind of a influenced a society that we have, and turn the other cheek and forgive.
Give a person a chance.
Nothing wrong with that. Listen, we all make mistakes. I screw up all the time. I'm glad people give me a second chance, you know.
Sure.
But we all tend to think that everybody has some good in them, and therefore if we just give them a second chance and keep helping them, that good will eventually come out. And that's our mistake. No good ever comes from them. Doesn't matter. I mean, you can spend 40 years trying to help them, and now that they're 85 years old, I'm speaking, of course, from personal experience, I will say no more.
Okay.
Now that they're 85 years old, you think, geez, you know, they're months, weeks, hours from death. Maybe now they will come to realize, forget it, doesn't happen. They will still try and con you with their dying breath. They will still say one last little insult to make you feel rotten about yourself, or find one other way to get something out of you, you know. So once you realize this, you can, once people realize that there are absolutely hopeless cases out there, forget about it. Then work on trying to diagnose them. If you have a suspicion, the best thing to do is to wait people out. So my wife always had a saying, is that you don't trust people, they have to earn your trust. And so that's the way I look at it now too. You know, I'm not judgmental. I don't judge you good or bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But based on your behavior, and I don't go based on what you say, because personally I'm a fool. You can tell me things and, you know, I'll want to believe you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'll want to think you're telling me the truth, because I don't want to believe that you're a lying son of a bitch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So words, I no longer look at what people say they do. I look at what they actually do. So somebody that says, oh, you know, I love animals, and oh, boo, boo, boo. And then, you know, a cat rubs up against their leg and they kick the cat across the room. You know?
Right. Right. That's indicative of what they really feel. Sure.
Exactly. So the only way you can see what they do is to step back and observe them for a while. So what I do is, it's not that I'm judging them. I'm not. I'm not being mean to them. Strangers or people that I already know, I'm not being mean to them. I'm just not going to give you my full trust right away. And I'm not going to enter into a personal sexual relationship with you, or B, enter into a business partnership with you, or C, you know, loan you money, or, you know,
sure,
let you babysit my children when I'm not around. You know, I'm not going to allow myself to be vulnerable to exploitation and abuse until I've seen you in action over a long period of time. And if your actions match what you say you are, then I will begin to trust you. Then maybe I'll go into a relationship. Maybe I'll trust you to take the kids to the park. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so that should be your strategy. It should be everybody's strategy, because we don't know anymore. You know, look at the world we live in. It's getting crazier and crazier. So I don't want to be a pessimist, and I don't want to be mean, but I will not make myself vulnerable. I will protect my assets, my person, my family, my people. I will protect them, and I won't make myself open to attack until I know that that person, you know, is as
sure
say they are.
Well, I believe that we are given that ability to evaluate and not judge, but to evaluate things just so that we can protect ourselves. And I don't think that it's judgmental at all. I think that that's something that we should do because it's a wise thing to do, to step back. Now, you mentioned when I told you that I don't know whether I want to call him a gentleman. This guy. You said, did he only have two people that he was targeting? And that's an interesting concept, because I suppose that if you're trying to find somebody that will be your ultimate target, your ultimate objective, that you're not going to just look in one place, but you're going to say, okay, which one of these four women or which one of these five women will make me feel the most powerful in some sort of a relationship?
Yeah. You know, all of this, everything that occurs in our society and what we do as people and what psychopaths do as people is part of, you know, survival on this planet. It, you know, I love nature, but nature is cruel, and survival is a real struggle. So from a survival point of view, are you going to hope that you take down just this one animal and then that way you can eat? Or are you going to try and, you know, corral a few animals, which increases your chances of finding food for the day as a predator, right?
Right.
So same thing with the psychopath. Are you going to spend all your effort trying to con one woman that you hope will provide for all your needs? Doesn't make sense from a survival standpoint, not when you can con six women at a time. And these guys, you know, that's where the term playa comes from, right? You know,
mm-hmm. They
play everybody. You know, he's got something going with the secretary at the office. He's got something going with the girl that serves him coffee at the Starbucks. He's got something going online, probably four or five different dating websites. He's got something going on with his ex-wife. He's got something going on with his two current girlfriends. I mean, that's what they do. They got a lot of time. You and I, we spend time enjoying life and feeling the world through our emotions, and that takes up a lot of our energy and a lot of our time. They are not distracted by any of that. So they've got a lot of free time, relatively speaking, and they make use of that free time by playing a lot of people all at the same time.
Right. And I would imagine that the internet would be an open field for finding people, finding targets.
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, the more, the wider you can throw the net, the more fish you will catch. And internet is a wide net, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
All righty, let's talk about stalking. As I mentioned, I've had people talk about this on the on my program before, that people have been stalked. And of course, we've all seen movies or read about people who have been killed by stalkers. And this is a real, I guess it must be a real situation, in as much as it does happen.
Yeah, it will certainly happen. There's a short chapter on stalking in the book, and it gives you, you know, the entire book is written to be like, you know, the most distilled essence of the information you need. So, you know, you would really need to do, if you're being the victim of a serious stalker, it's good to do as much research as you can. My book by itself won't be enough. It will give you what you need to know for a starting point to protect yourself. But of course, there's lots of nuances. But, you know, in the book, I distinguish between two types of stalkers. And one is the psychotic stalker, and the other is the psychopathic stalker. Now, the psychotic stalker is the kind of person that was it David Letterman that this woman was stalking?
Yes, I believe so. Mm-hmm.
Right? So she's psychotic, and the difference between psychotic and psychopathic, it sounds the same, but they're really two different things. A psychotic person has no grasp of reality, or their picture of reality is so twisted as to be unreal. So they are literally insane. It's crazy, you know. So the stalker that was stalking David Letterman, the psychotic woman, you know, she had this fantasy world of where David loved her and things like that. And that's with a lot of these celebrities, they'll attract the psychotic stalkers.
I can't imagine David Letterman attracting anybody.
I know. I think he's the ugliest guy on TV. But they're psychotic. They have no, you know, connection to reality. So, actually, one of the female stars, I forget, she was killed by one of these psychotic stalkers. So, for them, it's scary because they're insane. They will probably not resort to violence. It's all very rare. Like David Hinckley Jr., who shot John Lennon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another psychotic.
Hinckley shot.
John Lennon.
I was thinking he shot Reagan.
Huh? Oh, okay. David Chapman.
Yeah.
And he was the one that sent letters to Jodie Foster.
Yes, yes.
Because he thought Jodie Foster from Taxi Driver, you know.
Yeah.
Which was, I'm sorry, that was kiddie porn, but, you know.
Oh.
I thought that.
There's a lot of that, too.
Uh-huh.
Yes, there is a lot of that. JonBenet Ramsey. That was a weird.
No, her parents.
Weird thing.
Her parents did it, no doubt about it. You know, but we distinguish between the psychotic, which they're crazy, but they're crazy in a way that could be handled by a professional psychologist or by the police. And they might be dangerous only because they're crazy, you know. And stupid people are dangerous too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of people walking the streets that are dangerous because they're crazy or they're stupid. Which means that they will do things that will endanger other people's lives without understanding the consequence of what they're doing.
Right.
However, if your stalker is a psychopath, they understand the consequences of what they're doing, and they have a plan, you know, and they're the most dangerous, obviously. And in almost all cases where your stalker is a psychopath, it's usually a spouse or somebody that you've already had sex with. And they're the worst. And if that's the type of stalker, somebody that you've had sex with, who's a psychopath, and they're stalking you because, you know, they resent the fact that you're the prey and you got off the hook, you wiggled off the hook, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they want you back in the fold. It's a matter of pride for them, not because they care about you or they want you or they love you or anything like that. No, it's a matter
mm-hmm.
of you're their piece of meat and you escaped, and so now they're pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm.
with those type of stalkers, you know, you got to move, you got to change your name, you got to change your address, and that's all you can do. You can only run and hide unless, you know, because there was a, I read some article that said that if you were the type of person that when somebody was stalking you to that degree, you would wait for them to come home from work with, you'd wait, be waiting there in the bushes with a shotgun, they wouldn't have stalked you in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
See, you wouldn't have been a victim of these people if you were capable of fighting back. They knew you weren't capable of fighting back. That's why you're the victim. If you're the type of person that, well, you know, I'm going to abuse you and molest your children and rob you blind, and you said, the hell with that, I'm taking out daddy's old 45 and I'm going to put one right, you know, right,
okay,
up, right up your butt, they wouldn't have bothered with you in the first place.
Okay, so that's the difference. Okay.
Yeah.
If like I did with, what's his name? I can't even think of his name. It's, I'll think of it after the program. But I wouldn't want to say it online anyway. But I immediately put a stop to my victimhood by saying, I don't think so, buddy.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
That's your best way of dealing with them. You know, you've got to be strong enough that you can say, look, no, there's a line, you cross it, you're out, buddy, and that's it. And that line is a very thin line, and it's easy to cross. All I need you to do to see is you abuse any of my core principles of ethics, of treatment for towards other people and animals, and you are out the road. Then they mm-hmm. bother with you. You know, if your moral judgment is a little bit vague and you're willing to give people a lot of leeway before you would react, and then even if you did react, you wouldn't react in a strong way. Yeah, they're coming after you. They're coming.
Sure. And you would even sacrifice your own children's safety.
Oh yeah.
To be a victim.
Yeah, and you know, I find those victims a little bit despicable. I'm sorry, I do. I feel bad for them. I understand that they're victims, but you know. Sacrifice your children? You know, it's like these mothers that marry these psychopaths, and they know the psychopath is after their 12-year-old daughter, and they will stay in the marriage because they need the money.
Mm-hmm.
They will turn a blind eye to stepdaddy having his way with the kids and the family.
Mm-hmm.
Those mothers I find despicable.
Or even if they didn't have sex, but even if they just... took over the lives of children
just
in any way.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just bad.
Yep. You know, the brain cannot differentiate between imagined abuse and physical abuse. It's the same. It's, you know, if I were to slap you, what happens is...
I slap you back.
But physiologically, what happens is, or if, right now when I'm speaking to you, let's violent example. You know, the vibrations of the air stimulate the eardrum, which stimulates some hairs that are lined in the ear, and they vibrate, and that vibration is turned into a electrical chemical signal. And now you hear it. But what you are hearing is the result of an electrical and a chemical stimulus. So if that electrical chemical stimulus comes in another form, like through mental abuse, the brain doesn't distinguish between it. To us, our souls, our essence, abuse is abuse, whether we are beaten or whether we are verbally and emotionally abused. We are still scarred the same way because the brain cannot differentiate. Between,
amazing.
Yeah, you know.
That is
so
amazing.
It's all just as bad, you know. It's not like, oh yeah. And you hear that excuse a lot of times from these abusive parents. Well, yeah, you know, we isolated them, we ignored them, we verbally abused them their whole lives, but we never spanked them.
Okay.
Oh,
wow.
Well, you're a good person, aren't you?
Yeah.
No, you're not. You're just as horrible and abusive as if you did spank them.
Sure.
There's no difference, you know. So there's no getting off the hook just because you say, well, yeah, I never raped her. I just, you know, put my hand down her pants a couple of times, but there was no penetration.
Or if you just browbeat them every day.
Or if you just browbeat them, same thing, you know.
Sure.
Abuse is abuse, you know.
Yeah. All righty, we have a caller. We have a question.
Really?
In the 412 area.
Are you?
Okay. 412, you have a question? Yes, no?
Yes, no?
I can hear my echo. I'm not sure. What. Okay, do you have a question? Nope, I guess not. Okay, somebody probably just listening via the phone.
Yeah.
So that is a very interesting thing, that children can be browbeat. That is something that is really really terrible. If a woman goes into a relationship with a psychopathic person, that they allow their children to be browbeaten or berated, that says something about the woman.
Yeah, and nothing good. You know, I get it that, you know, she's, you know, those type of people tend to be weak, you know, weak.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what contributes to that?
Right.
You know, I'm not a psychologist. It's not my profession. The reason I wrote about it and I know about this is because I'm aware, and I've done the research for my own protection and to try and find out why the world we live in is such a disaster. You know, look at the events that are going on right now. It's just, I can't believe it. How many more trillions of dollars are they going to spend to bomb Iraq and bomb Afghanistan, Syria, and bomb there and bomb there, and another $200 million for this, and a trillion for the jet fighter, and, you know, we're going to build more aircraft carrier, billions and billions, and
you kind of wonder what is going on. I mean, I have friends in Iraq. I have people that I dearly care about. One particular lady that's been on my program several times, and she's from Iraq, and she tells the other side of the story, and I just I dearly love her, and I'm grateful that I know that I listen to both sides, and you can tell it. These people just want to have a life. They have families. They care about their families. They're just like you and me. Why would we be bombing somebody, strangers who have not done anything to us? It's just psychopathic, absolutely psychopathic.
Yeah, you know, I've lived all over the world, and you know, Africa, Asia, China, Europe. I've lived in the United States for like 15 years, and people are people, you know.
Yes.
There's, you know, a child in any country is the same as a child in any other country. You know, you know, and yes, there's bad people in China. There's bad people in the United States. Yeah, they're the psychopaths. We get that. But the rest of the people, we're all the same. It doesn't matter what religion, what color, what political ideology. Oh, Democratic children are just as sweet as Republican children.
Absolutely.
Hindu children are just as cute and adorable as Islamic children. You know, all of this stuff means nothing. We are human beings, for Christ's sakes. You know,
yes.
There's no reason, no excuse to be bombing these families. It's psychopathic. It is, because they make money. So if they need to kill a million people in Iraq, well, it's nothing to
do.
Look at that interview with Madeleine Albright. I don't
know. 500,000 children, and she thought it was worth it. Oh,
it's worth it. Yeah, it's
so blatant. You thought it was I just can't tell you how bad that was. Is I
know. I wanted to reach through the screen.
I did too.
Strangle this woman. You know,
I did too.
You know, and I'm not a fan of violence. You know, I've been a martial arts expert for 40 years. I've never hit anybody. I've never gotten into a fight. You know.
Sure.
Because I can talk my way out of it. You know, somebody's got to come with me and say, listen, I'm sorry, you know, let me buy you a beer, if that'll make it better, you know.
Sure.
I don't want any trouble. I mean, I could kill you, but do I say that? Do I do that? No.
Of course not.
What the hell's the point? Violence is horrible.
It is.
And then to think, oh, for your little political agenda, murdering 500,000 children, it's worth it? Oh, you know, and that woman is still walking around. And making lots of money. Somebody wrote that claims that she's able to leg press 400 pounds, and that made him throw up.
She's, yeah.
What a monster. It's like
she is a monster.
Lord of the Rings. She's like the Goblin King from the last movie, you know, the one with the testicle chin there. That's who she reminds me of, you know.
Yeah.
Monster.
Absolutely.
So that, you know, and those types of monsters tend to dominate the political spectrum, you know.
Yes. Obviously, that's something that many of them think. They just haven't said it. They haven't been stupid enough to say that. Oh, it's okay.
Yeah, and then the other video clip of Hillary clapping and laughing when she was told that Gaddafi was killed. Oh yeah, we came, we saw, he's dead.
Yeah, she's.
You are laughing about murder. Like, okay, maybe you think he was a bad guy. I don't know. I never met the guy personally. Was he a psychopath? Probably.
No, according to the thing that he did was that he said, no, I'm not going to cooperate with the United States of America. So, and that's when Rumsfeld went over there. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen the picture of Rumsfeld with Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
Saddam Hussein was saying, "No, I don't want any part of your proposition." And so it wasn't too long after that that we bombed him.
Yeah.
4 years later.
Yeah.
Three years later.
Saddam was set up for that, anyways. Yeah.
Sure.
They put them in power. They supported them. They sold them the weapons of mass destruction. They made a tidy little profit from it all.
Well, you know, that's another thing. Is that that's kind of a hearsay anyway. But let's talk about JonBenet Ramsey. That case has always intrigued me. And of course, they made a movie of it. And the thing that really struck me as interesting, first of all, the family had money. And the second thing is that they hired PR people. Mm-hmm. Now, what couple whose child was murdered is going to hire somebody for public relations purposes? Pardon me? That just doesn't seem to you know, that's just weird.
Like, if your child had been murdered, you would be too emotionally distraught to even conceive of hiring a public relations company worrying about your image. No normal human being would even, that would never come into your head, never.
Exactly. You'd want to catch the murderer. And the other thing is the note that was in her handwriting on her, I mean, this woman was really stupid.
Yeah. No, they killed her. Absolutely. I believe that. And
mm-hmm.
and I knew they killed her, I think, on the second day, just like I knew about 9/11 was an inside job on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is certain, you know, listen, once you get to know about what psychopaths are, now you can look at life differently, because
mm-hmm.
what you look for is how they behave, not what they say. So they're up there, oh, blah, 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 blah. They're saying this, they're saying that. But what
mm-hmm.
do they do? Let me give you an example. My dog went missing around that time during the JonBenet Ramsey murder. And I love my dog. And she didn't come home. And she didn't come home for 10 days.
You must have been crazy with worry.
I was crazy with worry. Now, I searched every square inch of my house, even though I knew there was no way that Miko is going to be under the kitchen sink. I knew she wasn't going to be there. I searched under the goddamn kitchen sink. I
mm-hmm.
left no stone unturned. I searched the backyard, the front yard, the attic, the basement, the closets, the laundry tub. You know, could they have gotten in here? I searched every square inch of the house. And then I searched every square inch of the property for blocks and blocks. And I kept expanding my search radius until I was bicycling 5 miles a day, searching and searching. This guy waits until the cops come there to the house, and then he says, oh, I'll go check the basement. I already knew. That's when I knew they did it. Because how could you not check the basement? I mean, my dog going missing, I checked every place where it would be impossible for the dog to get there. But I'm so desperate to find her that I would check everywhere. And if you're little, that poor innocent little child, and she was so cute.
She was darling.
She was just
darling.
And that you wouldn't even look in the basement? I mean, you didn't even go downstairs to take a look?
Well, I thought it was bizarre, too. I would never enter my child in a beauty contest or sexualize the child like that. I mean, that is what these beauty contests are, is the sexualization of innocence.
Absolutely. You know, what six-year-old girl is going to bump and grind, for Christ's sakes, on stage while wearing fishnet stockings and thigh-high go-go boots? I mean, come on.
They should be enjoying childhood.
Yeah, I personally think that those beauty pageants are abuse. I'm against them.
Absolutely, they are. And it's not something that the kid thinks up themselves. You cannot tell me the kid is going to go to their parent and say, I want to be in a beauty contest. No, it is the parent, particularly the woman, that promotes the sexualization of children.
Yep.
And so right away, I mean, that was something for me, too, is that I thought, well, what mother would want to do that to their sweet little innocent child?
Exactly.
To sexualize them. So there must be something really bizarre in that home.
Yeah.
But, yes, not checking the basement?
It's intentional, too, you know. Yeah, so to me, I already knew when they said, oh, then he checked the basement, and that's when he found the body. What do you mean? I would have been up and down that house 10 times in the 30 minutes it took the cops to arrive.
And they waited until the cops got there. There she is.
Oh, we just found her. Yeah, you know.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And then, to me, that one incident right there, I knew they were guilty. And I just knew they were guilty. Same
sure.
with 9/11. When I saw that first, actually it would be the second tower because my wife woke me up. Oh, look on the news. And then you didn't see the first airplane fly into the tower because that was broadcast later, but you saw the second one. And when I saw that tower go down, I went, there's no way a building can collapse like that without internal explosives taking out the main supports. How do I know that? Well, geez, grade 7 architecture class. I mean, it's simple. It's not, you know, now they have, you know, architects and engineers. Look, you don't have to be an architect or an engineer. My God, it's common sense. Things don't fall apart like that just because of
an aluminum plane hitting it.
Yeah.
I mean, they have on the wing, it's a, you know, you're not supposed to walk on the wing because they're so, well, they're vulnerable. They're weak. They're not meant to have people walking on them. And yet one is going to fly into a building and leave the shape of an airplane, right?
Yeah. You know, it's just so.
Sure, that happened.
You know, and then the mountain of evidence that came out afterwards. Well, to me, that's nice, but I already knew.
Sure.
Same thing with the Joan Benet stuff. The mountain of evidence that came out afterwards, the note, the amount of money they asked for and all their weird-ass behavior, you know, immediately getting a PR company, immediately getting a lawyer, things like that.
Sure.
Not cooperating with the police. What?
And then thinking of all these people that had keys. You know, somebody else had a key. Oh, yes, and those people had a key. I mean, they must have had, you know, what, 6 keys out?
Yeah.
It was just bizarre.
That was just another lie, you know. And that would all add it to it. But to me, the fact that they didn't find the body, I already knew that they were guilty. I already knew right then.
Yeah.
So, and it's like that with the psychopaths. Like I said, you know, they might tell you, oh, I love animals. The minute I see them kick an animal, or abuse an animal, I know from that point on, they don't love animals.
Sure. And you did find your dog after 10 days.
Yeah, she had gotten into a storm sewer.
Oh, bless her heart.
And she got lost, I guess, you know, and this was a rural community, so the storm sewer kind of were tunnels, and most of them had grates, and she got into the one that didn't have a grate. And anyways, one of the neighbors heard something in the backyard. There she was, and it was the happiest day of my life when I finally got her back.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh,
well, I'm glad. So, anyway, Joan Benet Ramsey.
Yeah. And so there's another psychopathic couple.
Okay, so that's a couple, yes, that they work together, absolutely, of course.
One of them was not innocent, right?
Which one?
Yeah, who was not innocent? Who was innocent? Her? Him? They were both guilty, obviously, you know. And so how could you partake in the murder of a little girl like that and not be a psychopath? And then, even if you, let's say it was some sort of accident. Oh, I slapped her because she misbehaved and she fell down the stairs and broke her neck. Something like that. Okay, I can understand. Maybe you're not a psychopath, even though hitting your kids is I'm against that. I'm totally against spanking children. But let's say that's how it happened or whatever. Then, okay, you might not be a psychopath. But you hit your kid, she falls down the stairs, snaps her neck, and then you spend the next 10 years lying your ass off about it. You're a psychopath. So both of them were psychopaths, no doubt about it.
Yeah. Now, she passed away, I believe, but they moved to, they left the state of Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they got away with it.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
Yeah, I guess they did.
They got away with it.
And most psychopaths get away with crimes. Most of them do. I mean, who's hanging for 9/11? Who's responsible? Mm-hmm. Who's been charged? Who's gone to jail? Nobody. Not one person, you know. Not even for incompetence. At least people should have been charged with incompetence, you know, because that's the last resort of a psychopath is... If they are caught red-handed, like we started off with at the beginning of the show, you know, dead hooker on the bed,
sure,
knife covered in blood, you know, even then they will, as a last resort, will play the what I call the stupid card. Oh, is that wrong? Are you not supposed to murder hookers? Because if I'd known, I wouldn't have murdered the hooker.
Sure.
I just didn't know. You know, so... That's always the last, and you see them do that all the time. It's like
the Bush resort, you know.
Yeah,
Bush was always playing. Oh, I didn't know about that, you know. And he's very smart. I mean,
sure he is, and he plays the idiot really well, you know.
Yes, he does.
And that's his cover.
Yes,
that's his cover. It's like the Seinfeld episode where George Costanza has sex with the cleaning lady on his desk, right?
I'm not a big TV watcher. But.
Oh, okay. Well, this is going way back. And the boss calls him in and says, sits him down. He says, George, we heard that you had sex with the cleaning lady on your desk after hours. Is this true? And George goes, wait a minute. Is that wrong? Is it wrong to have sex with the cleaning lady? Because if I'd known, I would never have done that, you know? And what that is that's the last resort for these bastards, you know?
Oh, yeah,
I got caught red-handed, but I didn't know. You know, look at... It's the excuse the goddamn Catholic Church has used for all those priests being caught molesting children. Oh, they come out and then it says that, oh, well, back in the 1970s, we didn't know that abusing children was bad. That was the Dark Ages. Everybody abused children. We didn't know. Was it bad for us to molest those kids? I mean, I can't believe that they have come up with that defense, that these priests didn't know that raping little boys was bad.
Well, I'm not sure that they said that. I really haven't kept up with that. I know that there are issues, but I think there are issues.
No, several people came out and said that. Well, those were different days, and we didn't, you know.
Okay.
The sexual.
But they still covered it. I mean, when you conceal things, you.
Yeah.
Now, somebody in the chat room said that JonBenet's mother was raised in Satanism. Now, I don't know anything about her background, and apparently the father's first family offspring were hushed up when they said that they were molested by him. So apparently there was some problems, generational problems, and where is he now? That's a question from the chat room. Where is Mr. Ramsey now? Has he remarried? Is he living in Atlanta somewhere?
That I have no idea. I haven't kept up with that story.
Yeah, but they did get away with it.
Yeah, they got away with it. And I think there is something to this intergenerational thing. Now, first of all, psychopaths and Satanism, well, it makes sense because, remember, they're just anti-everything. They're anti-life. They're anti-human. So if everybody's a Christian and the thing all Christians hate the most are Satanists, then they'll become a Satanist. I don't think that they're religious that way, that it's a faith or a belief system with them as much as they just enjoy being evil. And if joining a satanic cult makes them more evil, well, where do I sign up, you know?
Wow. So, or joining anything. For instance, Bush. I mean, he was a member of Skull and Bones early on at Yale.
Sure, and I'm sure just about
his father was also.
I'm sure that the Skull and Bones, because they only choose, I think, 11 or 12 candidates per year.
Right.
I'm sure those candidates are chosen on the basis of psychopathy. They're not going to have a decent guy in there. They're not going to have some guy with a conscience in there that might risk 10 years later coming out and saying, listen, I participated in all this weird sex crap and psychological mind abuse for this stupid multi-billionaire cult, and now I'd like to confess because I felt bad about it all these years. They're not going to take the chance that one of these guys is going to come out later and reveal all their dirty little secrets, right?
Sure.
So the people that they choose to go into these secret societies, and that's why I'm with, you know, Kennedy and his speech and with Washington and with Jefferson and with all the founding fathers that all said, no secret societies. What do you need a secret society for? What is secret? Why does this have to be secret? If you're up to no good, you need to keep a secret. But if you're just doing something decent and honest and noble, there is no reason for secrecy. So
yeah.
The minute I hear secret society, I think collection of psychopaths.
Right. Now, in your book, Under Security Measures, and I think this is really good, you say upgrade your home security by installing an alarm system, surveillance cameras, entry prevention devices, and building a safe room. You might also want to get a dog. This is one of the least expensive but most effective alarm systems. Block your address at DMV and voter registration. Never give out your home address or telephone number. Get a post office box and use it on all correspondence. Those are some very good admonitions.
Well, they're the defensive tactics, you know.
Right.
You know, America, middle-class America, is on the defensive now. You and I and those like us are being attacked on all fronts. It's a full spectrum warfare being waged against us. You have the government trying to tax everything you do and license and control, and then you have the big corporations trying to charge you and secret hidden charges this and service charge that and surcharge this, and you know, and then you've got on a societal level lots of desperate psychopaths and criminals. Everybody's trying to find a way to get your money, to get something from you. The government, your church, your corporations, the people you work with. You know, it's becoming like a madhouse here. Everybody has to cut everybody else's throat for a dollar, for Christ's sake, so they can pay.
Well, identity theft.
Identity theft. And on, you know. So what's going to happen as our society slides down, and we're in a decline right now, we are at the end of our peak. We are going, as things progress, they won't be getting better. So things become more desperate, people will become more desperate, and good people will do bad things because now it's a matter of survival, you know. You know, you put five people in a locked room with one loaf of bread, and after a week, two of those people are going to be dead.
Sure. You know?
So, and that's what they've done to us. They've put us all in a locked room, and they want us to fight over the last couple of crusts of bread and hopefully kill each other off over this, you know?
Well, but there definitely is more violence in society.
You got to protect yourself. That's why, you know, having you out there in the open saying, look, here's where I live, here's where I work, here's who I am, this is my phone number, this is my bank account, you know, all that stuff is just inviting, it's just providing an opportunity for criminals. So it's defensive, you know.
Sure.
Keep your cards close to your chest. Don't reveal too much about yourself to strangers or to the internet. You know, watch what you post online, you know. You can go to my Facebook page. You will not ever see anything about where I went to school or where I live or what my religion is or what my political beliefs are, because I'm not going to share that with the world. I'm not.
Well, I started a Facebook page three or four years ago, and then I thought, I don't think this is a good idea, and I shut it down. Although it's still there, but I'm not active in Facebook. But I think, now, this might sound a little paranoid, but I think the whole Facebook and social media Well, it could be part of a government operation, a collection of information, and I just don't want to participate. And it's unbelievable what people put on their Facebook pages. Embarrassing stuff that I wouldn't want my best friend to know about it, and they're sharing it with the world. What is wrong with people? Are they crazy?
Yeah, you know, and then all these little posts that they have, click like if you own a machine gun. I'm not clicking like if I own a machine gun. I don't own a machine gun, but I wouldn't click like even if I did, because what, do I want the entire world to know I own a machine gun, you know, or any one of those things. Sure, I wouldn't trust Facebook. I'd trust Facebook as far as I could throw a Buick. Oh, my
sure.
God. That's why I don't put anything personal on there. Never, ever, ever, ever anything personal on. Certainly don't post pictures of your kids on there and your family and things like that. You know, just think, even if it's not, you know, the government, which it probably is, and if it's not the corporations that are looking for...
Well, that's kind of the same thing.
Which is the same thing, the government, the corporation, the military-industrial complex. It's all the same thing, you know.
Sure.
So even if they're not behind it, which they are, but let's say, you know, let's say pretend that they're not behind it. Think of all the psychopaths that are out there that are looking for suitable victims. Oh, look there. They have a nice family. She just got divorced. She posted all about it on her Facebook page. Oh, she's got a couple of attractive young 10-year-old daughters. Wow. You know, come on, don't leave yourself vulnerable like that, you know. I wouldn't.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And you talk about law enforcement, and you say that as soon as you find yourself the target of a stalker, you should start documenting the situation. This means writing down incidents and encounters, keeping letters, emails, or gifts, taking pictures or video of the stalker near your home or workplace. Now, I saw a television program the other day, because I'm kind of doing some research, and so it was about a stalker who was the boyfriend of, they were at college, and it was a program dedicated to college stalking or something. And this girl, and he was obviously a psychopath, but this young woman was his girlfriend, and everything was fine, and then he started becoming very possessive and kind of dictatorial, and so she kind of broke it off with him. He began stalking her, and the police could not do a single thing until he acted. Well, he ended up shooting her to death.
Yeah.
And the problem is that even if you document things and you call and you get a restraining order, that, well,
means
the victim is still sometimes killed.
Yeah, you know, for that, the reason I put that advice in there is because that's the standard advice that everybody offers, you know, and I personally don't think a restraining order might work against a non-psychopathic stalker, but a restraining order is not going to work against a psychopath. What do they care about that? They know the cops aren't going to be guarding your house, and even if you phoned the police and said, oh, my stalker's out the front door, are they going to even show up? They don't want to get involved in some domestic or whatever, what they call it, domestic. So you should do it because, you know, it might be used in a court of law to convict the guy after they find your dead body, you know.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
How many cases haven't we seen where that, you know, the true crime stories where afterwards they found the note, by the way, if I'm found dead, it's so-and-so that would have been the prime suspect, you know, and they use
sure.
that evidence to convict the stalker afterwards.
Right.
But more importantly, what I recommend in the book and in the video is take self-defense lessons, take firearm training, get a firearm and protect yourself. And, you know, not just an alarm system because they can be bypassed, but make sure that your home cannot be broken into, which is a solid front door, a solid casing with not just a double lock, but a bar across the front of the door and windows that can't be broken, because everybody thinks that, you know, a window is going to keep somebody out. It keeps nobody out. I throw a brick through your window, I'm in your house in 10 seconds, you know.
Right.
No matter how many locks you have on the front door. When I lived in Asia, Every house had iron bars on the windows because they were notorious for cat burglars. So if there was a window that didn't have bars on it, and not only that, they had double doors. One was an iron bar, steel, solid steel door on the front, and another solid steel door on the inside. You know, so you had to open up two steel doors to get into a house.
Mm-hmm.
Bars were covered. That's the only thing that will keep you safe. So the cops aren't going to keep you safe. The court system won't keep you safe. Yeah, you can go through that route. It's probably going to be a waste of time. But ultimately, as with everything in this world, it's up to you yourself. When a disaster strikes, when you're when you're being targeted, you know, the cavalry is never there to rescue you at the last minute. You are in it on yourself. So you need to take those precautions. And if that means self-defense classes and bars on the windows and, you know, keeping a loaded pistol in the drawer beside the bed at night, that's what you got to do.
Because sure.
It won't work, you know.
Now, you set a safe room, which I think is a very good idea. It's a place to go to that you can, well, you have a loaded pistol or you have protection, you have a cell phone handy.
Yeah. Like an ensuite bathroom, if you know, are fortunate enough to live in a house that has an ensuite bathroom in one of the bedrooms, you know, that would make a good safe room. All you have to do is put extra strong doors and locks on both the doors to the bathroom, right?
Sure.
And make sure there's a landline in there or have a cell phone in there. And, you know, if you got the family shotgun, put that in the closet behind the towels, you know, so that if, you know, not just a stalker, but let's say, you know, a home invasion crew
Sure. Comes
into your house, you know, then you could run into the bathroom, lock the doors, and those doors won't determine predator out. Every door can be broken down. It only takes time. But if you can keep them out for 10 minutes while you load the shotgun and make the phone call.
Right. Now, you have a whole bunch of things about crime prevention, awareness, posture, safe distance, street smarts, crime prevention strategy, home safety and defense, bad neighbors, travel safety, bad neighborhoods, defense against carjacking, which is a big crime, car breakdowns, car emergency kit, car accidents, public transportation. You have just a lot of things in here. It isn't just about psychopaths, but it is protecting ourselves against things that might occur, well, including natural disasters. You have preparing for a disaster plan, home emergency kit, water, food, first aid kit, emergency pocket kit, what to do in a disaster. I mean, you have covered a lot of things in here. And because of the world that we're living in, well, look at all the disasters that have happened.
Yeah. You see, Deanna, I'm a big a student of history, and I believe that we are in a cyclic period of history where we will see a decline in civilization. We'll come out of it, and when we come out of it, it will be a better world. But right now, we're going to go through a bit of a storm. And what typically happens, and I've seen this repeated throughout history, the Roman Empire, the Persian, the Chinese, the Japanese, the Hindu, they've all gone through it, and it's always exactly the same. What happens is things start to fall apart, and the first thing that falls apart is law and order. So you're going to have a lot of crime because unemployment and homelessness and lack of resources and people getting desperate and hungry and with the drugs and the fear-mongering and the paranoia, well, crime is the number one thing that's going to happen, and it's the first thing that's going to increase. So the first chapter, crime prevention and all the things that can go wrong in that sense. The second thing that happens is that the governments typically in every empire, because they're so corrupt and they're robbing the taxpayer, they don't spend money on infrastructure. So what happens is the dams they build are no longer maintained and they flood. So
absolutely.
When
yes.
An hurricane comes through, you know, in a good times, well, okay, you're going to be inconvenienced for 3 or 4 days until the government can come and send food and send workers to fix the dam and drain the swamps again. But when the government is so corrupt that it might take months before food is sent to a disaster area, it might take years before they fix the dam or
Right.
So that's why the second part of the book is on natural disasters. You know, will have to survive on your own for that time. And then the third one is social disasters, war, corruption, martial law, riots. And so that's what always happens. So the third part of the book is how to deal with war and corruption and pandemics and diseases, Ebola, you know.
Sure.
Because that, you know, it's the horse.
Right.
Sort of four horsemen of the apocalypse. It all starts to happen, you know.
Right.
Islands, natural disasters. And so the book is aimed to help everyone to survive.
Okay. And that book is The Art of Urban Survival. And the author is Stefan Verstappen. And the website is urbansurvivalstrategies.com. Stefan, thank you so much for being on the program today. It's been very, very educational. And
thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And I hope that people will purchase the book. Very interesting book with a lot of good information. So thank you.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, listeners.